kids are looking for information, they're looking for connections, and they're pretty resilient. Adults become pretty habituated in some of their behaviors, whereas kids are open book and they're learning and they're changing and growing. And so what we try and do is provide a lot of information to them, and they can choose to use it or not. But we want them to become healthy, happy adults, good partners, good employees, good community members, good kids to their parents, good parents themselves if they have kids. So that's our goal, and it's really fun and rewarding.
Welcome to Cascade Views, a discussion with Central Oregon leaders. Your host is Michael Seip, local business and community leader, best-selling author of The Avada Principle, and candidate for Oregon State Representative for House District 53, which encompasses Southern Redmond, Sisters, Tumalo, and Northern Bend. The purpose of these discussions is to share the views and insights of local leaders from a variety of community sectors on a range of timely and important regional and state issues. With that, now here is your host, Michael Seip.
Thanks for joining us on Cascade Views. This is Michael Seip, and I'm excited to welcome my friend Stephanie Alstadt to the show today. Stephanie is the CEO and president of JBRJ Youth Services. She started with JBRJ in 1989 and began working with teens and families, providing mediation, shelter, groups, and individual case management at Cascade Youth and Family Center. In 1997, she became CEO. And over the past 30 years, Stephanie has developed the organization with the addition of multiple programs serving youth. These include the Academy at Sisters, Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Central Oregon, Street Outreach, the Loft Transitional Living Shelter for Homeless Youth, the AT Project, providing services for human and sex trafficking survivors, and J5 Parole and the Revocation Program. Stephanie's focus has been on building the capacity of the organization through a continuum of services to assure youth are prepared to be productive adults. She believes in the potential of young adults and has committed her career to support them. Stephanie has served on many boards and is a state resource for legislation. She's at the table for important issues related to kids and families. She's currently a member of the board of directors for First Story, the Oregon Alliance for Children, a member of the governor-appointed Interstate Council for Juveniles, the Oregon Youth Authority Partners Advisory Council, and a member with me of the Rotary Club of Greater Bend. Stephanie's joining us today to talk about youth here in Central Oregon and how we can positively impact our upcoming leaders. So it's my pleasure to welcome her to the show. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Mike. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's get started today with me asking you to tell us a bit about what sparked your passion to do what you do. What's the driving factor that led you to serve the youth of Central Oregon?
I really love working with kids. I have always really enjoyed it. Kids are looking for information. They're looking for connections, and they're pretty resilient. Adults become pretty habituated in some of their behaviors, whereas kids are open book and they're learning and they're changing and growing. And so what we try and do is provide a lot of information to them, and they can choose to use it or not. But we want them to become healthy, happy adults, good partners, good employees, good community members, good kids to their parents, good parents themselves if they have kids. So that's our goal, and it's really fun and rewarding.
Thanks. JBRJ has, as I alluded in the introduction, JBRJ is a huge program. Can you give us just a brief overview of each of the main aspects of the JBRJ programs?
Sure. We do try and create a continuum of services. So we have prevention, intervention, treatment, and then education. And in prevention, we start out with Big Brothers, Big Sisters, so mentoring, and then we go into Kindred Connections, which I like to call Big Brothers, Big Sisters kind of on steroids, because it's a whole family. And Kindred Connections will, say, take a 4 and a 7-year-old into their home and raise them like their own. If their mom, for example, has to go in for 6 weeks for treatment or 2 weeks into the hospital and doesn't have support. So that's Big Brothers, Big Sisters, and Kindred Connections. Those are kind of our prevention programs. And then we go into intervention, which is Cascade Youth and Family Center. And it's this whole suite of services from the Loft, which is transitional living for homeless, the Basic Center, which is mediation and short-term shelter, trying to get parents and kids back together again, figure out what's going on, street outreach, trying to get kids off the street, anti-trafficking. Again, we run into girls that are selling themselves for a place to live, or drugs or alcohol or food. And so that kind of ties in with that. And we provide the services. And then Grandma's House for pregnant and parenting teens, independent living program, which is foster kids coming out of Department of Human Services. So it's this whole array of services for kids. And then we get into treatment, which is JBRJ Boys Ranch, J5, the Academy at Sisters. And for those residential programs, kids live there and go to school there. So we are a registered school and can give credits because we have to educate the kids that are living in the residential programs. So it's a whole continuum of services.
This is amazing. And from our friendship over the years, I've heard a variety of stories from many of these different programs. I'd love to hear just a couple of stories, anonymous, of course, so that we can understand at an individual level how people's lives are actually being transformed through the work that you're doing.
Yeah, you know, that's what makes it really fun. The longer you stay in this business, the more you see kids come back. And like last summer, Culver firefighter came by the Boys Ranch with his son and his wife. And he said, yeah, I want to show my son where I grew up. And so they're living and working in the community. You go to get your car fixed and the mechanic says, oh yeah, I went to JBRJ Boys Ranch. And it really helped me out. Or I'm at the hairdresser's getting my hair done. And the lady says, well, where do you work? And I said, JBRJ. And she said, oh, my husband went there, but now he's in IT at, you know, big company, or works for the hospital or whatever. And we still use all the information that he learned. And so, you know, there's people that are in the community and you just don't know it. I was at going to Starbucks. Okay. I either get my hair done or I'm going to Starbucks, right? I was at Starbucks and she said, well, where do you work? And I said, JBRJ. And she said, oh, I lived at the Loft and they really helped me get on my feet. So it's just, you know, when you start talking to people in the community, it's really fun. That's the fun part of it. We had a young boy who was 8 years old that was crawling under his desk and he was kind of being raised by his older brothers and sisters and the school counselor called and said, we need some help for this kid. And so we hooked him up with a big brother, and he was the first kid in his family to not end up in the juvenile justice system. And he went on to college, and he's still connected with his big brother. So those are the super fun stories. Trying to think of a few more. So one of the girls at the academy wrote this beautiful letter to us, and she said, she goes, yeah, I used to watch all the staff because I wanted to know what they were doing to have fun, because my idea of having fun used to be going out and getting some weed and then getting some beer and then going on to get other stuff. And she said, I suddenly realized I could go rock climbing, or I could go skiing, or I could go horseback riding, or I could go out in nature and hike Smith Rocks. And I didn't need all of those other things. And so that was a really fun letter to get. And one other that sticks in my mind that was huge was a young boy that was, he was living out in the woods with his dad, and they were in a tent or a camp trailer. I can't remember which. He would walk into town every day to get food for him and his dad. And he would try and go to school. And So then his dad got really sick and ended up in the hospital. And so he ended up at the loft and he saved a bunch of money. And by the time his dad was better and able to come back, he had saved up enough money that he got his own apartment. And we have a picture of him with his key in front of his apartment. And so he got an apartment for he and his dad. I mean, it was just the greatest story. So it's just fun stuff like that that keeps you kind of hooked in with all the kids to see them become successful and just become, you know, good, solid members of the community.
Wow, what heartwarming story. It's got to be so fun to be you and just wander around the community and meet all these people. It's awesome. Let's take a minute, though, and focus specifically on homeless kids. So your website states that the number of unaccompanied homeless children under 18 has tripled from 2021 to, from 2020 to 2021. Why do you think there's been such a spike, and what do you see as the solution?
Yeah, you know, it's really tough. I mean, I am very concerned for our state. I'm very concerned for our country. You know, I think we shut down a lot of businesses. We have rampant inflation. There's a lot of stuff that is really pushing people. And it was bad enough in Bend to try and afford an apartment. Now it's even worse. And so we're trying to go upstream a little and work with the adolescents, because if we can get kids, you know, during their teen years, we can prevent them from becoming adult homeless. And so Eliza Wilson is our community program manager, and she works a lot with the city of Bend, and she has done just a fabulous job in keeping us in the dialogue, because you want to keep kids in the dialogue, because again, that's your, you can prevent them from becoming the adult homeless. And so that's our goal. The other piece that I see with homeless is that I think a lot of the community doesn't have the understanding about, you have to separate the populations. I mean, there are some real dangerous players out there. And if you want to read a really good book, it was called All God's Children. And it was written about Portland and how a criminal kind of infiltrated a homeless group and got kids to murder somebody. And so there's some real dangerous players out there. And so, you know, my advocacy is to say, look, there needs to be a place for kids. There needs to be a place for adult men. There needs to be a place for women or women and children, but we shouldn't mix them. And this kind of all-in-one homeless camp is just not a good idea. There's a lot of drugs and alcohol and mental health issues. And so what is a good idea is things like the Veterans Village, where they have a social service center and they have help for people. And then the tiny homes, St. Vinny's Place, same kind of model. Those are good ideas. You want support. And I'd be remiss if I didn't say, in the homeless population and the homeless issue, you know, you're going to have 30 to 35% that don't, even if you have services, don't want to avail themselves of the services. They're just, and it's not that they don't want to, it's that they're just not in a place to do that yet. And so we just need to be cognizant of that it's really hard. I mean, look at Seattle has tried to eliminate homelessness, and that was, you know, they were on their 10-year plan and then they were on their 20-year plan, and it's not gotten any better. And so I'm an advocate of whatever you do, you need to be measuring success and not just taking money and throwing it at people. There needs to be accountability, and there need to be the services available, but accountability with that. So I don't know if that all makes sense, but those are some of my thoughts on the homeless issue.
You know, you triggered with those comments something that's really troubling to me, and that's sex trafficking. Do you think that there's any connection between the rise in homelessness and sex trafficking?
Yeah, sex trafficking. I think girls have always sold their bodies. I mean, in the 30 years I've been doing this, I used to get calls, hey, there's a 16-year-old girl living in a hotel room in Redmond with a 40-year-old man. So I think that's been happening. I think sex traffickers got kind of smart over the years, and they realized that girls are a valuable commodity and they can use them over and over and over again, unlike drugs, which you sell it once and the shipment's gone and you have to take the risk again. Whereas with girls, they get into the life, and the traffickers isolate them and then take them wherever, and they're kind of stuck there. And we have a great advocate who speaks to that in Bend, and she tells her story. She actually went to Mountain View and ended up in Portland and got caught into the life and got trafficked and got out after 3 years. And it's a fascinating story, but yeah, there's just more and more kids that are susceptible to that. And I think it ties in with, yes, there's not enough resources, but also it just ties in with where we're at in society in terms of, you know, these kids feel a little lost and abandoned, and then you start getting into all the social media and the cell phone stuff. So it's a huge, huge issue. And people don't understand that it is. And oftentimes the men will put everything in the victim's name. So therefore, when they get picked up, they can say, well, I was just giving her a ride. This is her car, her phone, although she doesn't have control of any of it. And so they're really hard to prosecute. And so, you know, you have the prosecutor saying, yeah, there's no sex trafficking in Bend. And it's like, yeah, but then we've had, you know, 50 to 70 girls that we've been working with. So we provide services, and there is a problem. And we try and work with all the other agencies, and we convene a group called the Commercially Sexually Exploited Children's Task Force, or CSET Task Force. And it involves the FBI, the sheriff, the Bend Police, the DA's office, Kids Center, Saving Grace, JBRJ, and really try and coordinate what's going on in the trafficking world. Like if there was somebody that was coming across state lines and he brought a trafficked girl and we ended up having her in shelter. But it's really tough, you know, and sometimes the girls want to run away and they want to get back into it because guess what? They're making a lot of money. They're getting their hair done. They're getting a lot of clothes. They're getting drugs and alcohol. And so it's a really tough, it's a tough situation.
You know, it seems like, at least for some kids, that could be a pretty depressing situation. And I see JBRJ and all the work that you're doing as a kind of a center for hope and a way that you can provide that to kids in the face of adversity. So how do you inspire them to keep moving forward, particularly if they've had, you know, a rough patch?
You know, every child needs a caring adult in their lives. And we as adults have the experience, we've got some knowledge, some wisdom sometimes. And we need to share that with kids. I find kids just gravitate and they do want to hear, and they do want structure. They fight you the whole way sometimes, but, you know, we just try and provide them information of, you know, who you were yesterday. You don't have to be that person tomorrow. And you have you have control of how you think, and your thinking leads to your actions. And so we talk a lot about that, about facts versus beliefs, about thinking that will get them in trouble versus thinking that won't get them in trouble. Even buzzwords like you should do this, or you always, or you never. And really try and get kids to take ownership for themselves and their thinking. And that leads them to be a happy, healthy adult. Ultimately, happy, healthy adults have learned not to use victim stance, not to use all those thinking errors that get them in trouble. You know, the shoulds and the always and you must do this. And again, I get back to, we've become divided in our country. We've become very judgmental, and everybody wants their soapbox. And I did mediation for 8 years, bringing parents and kids back together. And I think that's where we need to go. We need to listen to each other and be kind and have compassion and grace with one another instead of going, oh, you know, whatever you said, it was wrong. You know, no matter what you say, sometimes I feel as a leader, no matter what you say, it could be wrong according to who the audience is. And so you can never please all of the people. You have to, you know, just be the best you can be and treat others the way that you want to be treated.
That's some real truth. Well, as we move toward wrapping up here, would you share with us just a couple of key objectives that you have for JBRJ over the next year or two?
Over the next year or two, we're working with Kindred Connections. It's our partnership with the local churches through their Fostering Hope initiative. They started a few years ago, and they are intrigued and want to. We have a house in Redmond, and they want to use it as a drop-in shelter and a short-term shelter for adolescents in Redmond. And so we're pretty excited to do that. I know the city and county is looking at the Oasis Center for Adults. And so we want to make sure that we're taking care of not only Bend, but Redmond as well, and getting those outlying communities. And so we're in the midst of remodeling that house right now for that. We're also working with the city of Bend on homelessness. As I said, Eliza Wilson is working on that, and Jana Hill is the one working on Kindred Connections along with Eileen. So they're doing a fabulous job. So those are, and then we'll also probably beef up our trafficking. We're looking at getting some more federal grants for that. So we'll continue to work with the CSIC task force and shelters and services for trafficked victims.
Wow, there's just so much here. We're going to have to do another one or two of these just to dig into on Kindred Connections and on a couple of other topics. But for today, how can our listeners get involved and how can they learn more about JBRJ?
If anybody ever wants to work with kids, we need staff. We need good staff. You could do part-time, a couple shifts a week if you want to work with kids. We train people. And so, you know, anybody that has been a parent or even not been a parent, that's kind of what we're trying to do. We're trying to be good parents to these kids, provide structure and information and education and help them just become happy, healthy adults. So we can always use staff, volunteers, whatever.
Awesome. Hey, I had one last question that came to mind just now. So thinking about kids, what are some key warning signs that a child might be in danger or maybe needs help?
We have seen over the last couple of years, lots of anxiety, depression, cutting, suicidal thoughts, any isolation. You want to keep your kids close. And so the top risk factors are attitudes, values, and beliefs, and negative peer associations that are going to get them into trouble. Those are the top risk factors. And so who they're hanging out with and how they're thinking. And so just keeping your kids close. There's a lot of research out there. Dr. Jean Twenge on the I generation, how they're just more depressed when the more screen time they have, cell phones. Yeah, monitor your cell phones or your kids. Don't let them have, you know, unlimited cell phones. I hate to say that, but we take cell phones away from kids for a bit, you know, kind of digital diet for a little bit. Thomas Kersting wrote a good book called Disconnected. So there's lots of information on that. Too much screen time. So when they start to isolate, they don't want to have anything to do with you. Those are real triggers and warning signs.
And so just briefly, like if a parent, just a regular family, regular parent out there begins to notice these warning signs, what would be your advice to the parents to, I don't know if the right word is intervene, but, you know, to care or to step in to keep it from slipping away?
You know, I always come from the heart and I just go, look, to my own kids, I love you. And I'm not trying to meddle in your life, but I want to spend time with you because I care about you and I love you. And so what's going on? You know, I mean, I would just say spend more time with them, do something they want to do, and get them talking. You know, it was funny. One of the things is when kids would get in a car with us, even as just counselors, to take them to an appointment or job hunting or whatever, and the music's on and they're in the car, they start to tell you everything because they feel comfortable. And so versus sitting in an office. So, you know, I'd say get out and do stuff with your kids and spend time with them and ask them questions and ask them some of the hard questions and find out what's going on with them.
That's just terrific advice. Stephanie, it's been so good having you on the show. Thanks for the work you and your team does to serve our community. I think my main takeaway out of our conversation today is just all of the amazing stories. Those are just so heartwarming and encouraging. They've got to encourage you and your staff every day as you see the fruit of all the work that you do. Sure appreciate your time. Really appreciate your message today.
Well, thank you. And thank you for running for the challenge of serving as Central Oregon's representative. I'm so excited. It's a hard job. So thank you for running for rep. We're excited to have you.
Your comments about seeming to, no matter what you say, always be in trouble. That's that seems to be pretty much the story of my life right now. But it's fun. I'm meeting some great people and having a lot of fun. And it sure is. These podcasts have been a fantastic way for me to get to visit with leaders like you and to learn more and then to be able to share that with people all over the region and all over the state now, actually. So thanks very much for being on the show. My guest today has been Stephanie Alstad, leader of JBARJ Youth Services. You can learn more about the organization at jbarj.org. That's jbarj.org. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Cascade Views with Michael Seif. To find out more about Mike, the upcoming election, the key issues he's focused on, and his campaign to represent Central Oregon and Salem as a state representative, visit www.avoiceforcentraloregon.com. That's www.avoiceforcentraloregon.com. You can get your own copy of Michael Seif's best-selling book, The Avada Principle, at amazon.com. And finally, please vote in the upcoming election. Your voice matters.